U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski says an impasse over a payroll tax cut extension could mean a showdown or a meltdown between the House and Senate. Murkowski told reporters in Anchorage yesterday she believes Congress will break the impasse, but she's not sure how. Senators are already home for the holidays after passing the two-month extension. The House rejected it, with majority Republicans calling for negotiations on a year-long plan. Murkowski calls the Senate plan a reasonable compromise that provides time to find a more permanent solution. But without agreement by year-end, payroll taxes will rise, for example, by nearly $20 a week for a worker earning a $50,000 salary. Congressman Don Young, by the way, voted with the Republican House majority to reject that extension yesterday. The House Ethics Committee has cleared Young of violations, but it is changing the rules to prevent the type of fundraising that got him in trouble. Young received a dozen donations of $5,000 each to his legal funds, which were all tied to the same Louisiana businessman. The donations came from 12 different companies owned by Gary Chouest and his family. He runs Edison Chouest Offshore, a marine transportation company that has made sizable campaign contributions in the past to both Young and Senator Lisa Murkowski. If the $60,000 had come from a single source, it would have greatly exceeded the $5,000 limit on donations to legal defense funds, but the Ethics Committee found that the companies are officially different entities, despite their ties. The committee said in a statement it's concerned that the incident, while legal, challenges the principles of contribution limits. To prevent similar cases in the future, the Ethics Committee is changing the rules on January 1st. Now the owner of a company will be tied to its contributions rather than the company alone being responsible. Young put out a press release yesterday saying he's pleased that the Ethics Committee confirmed he did not violate House rules. Petersburg is giving up its legal challenge over redistricting. While the town is not happy about losing its longtime legislators next year, the mayor and majority of city councilors have voted not to appeal the case to the Alaska Supreme Court. Mac Lichtenstein has more.
I really hate to spend another nickel on this.
Councilor Sue Flint made it plain she didn't want to continue Petersburg's legal challenge against the state redistricting board. She had several concerns.
In order for them to open this up again, they're going to have to make people who are very happy with their districts unhappy. And I just honestly can't see it happening. I know we will miss Bert Stedman, but I feel strongly like we've gone far enough with this.
The city filed its lawsuit last summer, shortly after the Alaska Redistricting Board finalized new legislative boundaries that combined Petersburg in House and Senate districts with Juneau and Skagway. Petersburg currently shares a House district with Sitka and Wrangell. Its Senate district also includes Ketchikan. Petersburg initially challenged the redistricting plan on a number of issues. The suit argued that Petersburg would have less of a voice in the legislature and had more in common socially and economically with smaller southeast cities than with Juneau. Petersburg officials this fall decided to drop those arguments and seek a summary judgment solely on the issue of whether the new district was compact as required by the state's constitution. A Superior Court judge ruled against Petersburg and in favor of the redistricting board earlier this month. Councillor Mark Jensen was one of the plaintiffs named in the suit along with the city itself. He still felt strongly about the issue Monday night, but he doubted the city would have any success with an appeal to the state Supreme Court.
We couldn't spend enough money probably to get it changed this way. I wish we wouldn't have let the other part of the appeal go, but we did.
Petersburg spent about $30,000 on its lawsuit, and according to city manager Steve Giesbrecht, the city's redistricting attorneys has said it would cost another $10,000 to mount an appeal. The council voted 6-1 against taking that action. Councillor John Jensen was opposed. The new districts are slated to go into effect after this legislative session. However, that could potentially be affected by an ongoing redistricting challenge that's out of Fairbanks, and it's scheduled for trial in January. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Ketchikan Superior Court Judge Trevor Stevens is the new presiding judge for the 1st Judicial District, which encompasses Juneau and the rest of southeast Alaska. Alaska Supreme Court Chief Justice Walter Carpanetti yesterday appointed the presiding judges for the state's 4 judicial districts. Superior Court Judge Ben Esch has been named presiding judge for the 2nd District. covering most of the northern areas of the state, including Barrow, Nome, and Kotzebue Superior Courts. Superior Court Judge Sen K. Tan is the presiding judge for the 3rd Judicial District for South Central Alaska and the Aleutian Chain, and Superior Court Judge Douglas Blankenship will preside over the 4th. That huge district is administered from Fairbanks and extends from the Canadian border west to the Bering Sea. 3 of the 4 presiding judges have served in their districts for more than a decade. Stevens was appointed to the Superior Court in the 1st Judicial District in 2000. Esch has served in the 2nd District since 1996, and Tan has been a Superior Court judge in the 3rd District also since 1996. The 4th Blankenship was appointed to the bench in 2005. In addition to regular judicial duties, presiding judges are administrators, business managers, and have to make sure their district trial courts follow statewide court objectives and policies. The one-year terms begin in January. Incumbents can be reappointed. The University of Alaska says it has secured a $1.5 million match needed for a $15 million federal grant to expand a teacher mentoring program. The university system says the program already helps 320 teachers in 48 mostly rural districts. With the grant, it would help another 850 first- and second-year teachers, expanding the program to Anchorage, Fairbanks, Mat-Su, and Kenai districts. The program aims to reduce teacher turnover and improve student achievement. And the University of Alaska Fairbanks has received a $1.4 million grant for a suicide and substance abuse prevention program in rural Yupik Eskimo communities in southwestern Alaska. The money goes to the Center for Alaska Native Health Research Program, exploring how Alaska Natives are using cultural traditions and ancestral knowledge to promote well-being. Funds also will go toward hiring additional rural project staff and to develop a training center to take the project to other communities. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation received the funding from the state and passed the money to UAF for the 3-year project. Alaska's Marine Highway System is asking the legislature to budget $22 million for new fast ferry engines, but it may not use the money if a lawsuit against the shipbuilder succeeds. Engines on the Fairweather and Chiniga have shown signs of excessive wear that could stop them from sailing within a few years. State officials tried to negotiate a solution, then filed suit. They also asked the court for a preliminary injunction forcing the builders to provide replacements soon. That's because the engines could wear out before the issue goes before a jury. Ferry Chief Mike Newsell says experts check the engines at least every year.
The Fairweather just recently underwent an inspection and was granted authority to operate for another year. So we are good through the summer 2012 operating season on Fairweather's engines.
The Chinega will be inspected in January, and its engine cylinders could be bored out to remove damage. But little more can be done for the Fairweather's power system. The $22 million would replace the engines of just one ship. The funds are in Governor Sean Parnell's capital budget request for the fiscal year starting in July. Newsell says it would not be a direct appropriation of state money.
Those are federal receipts. That's really seeking authority from the legislature to be able to use federal funds to replace the fast ferry engines should that become necessary.
Newsell says replacement engines would likely come from the company that built the current set because few other choices are available.
They have safely powered the ship, moved a lot of people, moved a lot of vehicles, and have done it safely. It's just a longevity issue and the ability for them to last as long as the ship lasts. That's really the heart of the issue here.
It's not known when the judge will rule on the preliminary injunction against the shipbuilder, which is Director Shipyards, and the subcontractors that built the engines. The fast ferries each carry up to 250 passengers and 36 vehicles. The Fairweather was built in 2004 and the Chiniga in 2005. TransCanada and ExxonMobil will not file the next step of required paperwork on a natural gas pipeline to the lower 48. The company should file draft resource reports this month on the potential Alaska Pipeline Project, or APP. But yesterday they told federal authorities they're holding off for now. Tony Palmer is TransCanada Vice President of Alaska Development.
The resource reports are complete and ready to be filed, but as you will recall, in the fall, Governor Parnell encouraged the North Slope producers to work with the APP to evaluate an LNG option.
Palmer says TransCanada and Exxon are discussing Parnell's request with North Slope producers, so while a liquefied natural gas option is on the table, they will wait to release the resource reports. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission expected the reports this month and already planned the next step, which is scoping meetings scheduled to start January 18th in Anchorage. Larry Persily is Federal Coordinator for Alaska Natural Gas Transportation Projects. He says the scoping process could still go forward. That's if TransCanada and Exxon do submit those reports by early January.
If they turn in reports in a few weeks, everyone can start reviewing the data that will be used in the environmental impact statement. There's certainly still time, not much, but there's still time to stay on schedule for a complete application to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in October 2012.
The companies are supposed to file their finished application by October 2012. Palmer says that's still the plan. He says TransCanada is by no means giving up on a lower 48 gas line through Canada. Palmer says interest in LNG has risen because of an increase in natural gas supplies in the lower 48 and growing overseas markets. FERC is still planning the gas pipeline scoping meetings in January, but parties involved say if TransCanada and Exxon do not file the resource reports in the coming weeks, it will change next year's project timeline. Anchorage police are looking for a handyman they say scammed customers and fled with rental deposits on an apartment that he didn't own. Anchorage fraud detectives are looking for 26-year-old Kyle Dwiggins, owner of Sooner Repairs. Police say Dwiggins advertised his repair and remodeling service with flyers hung on doors, mostly in East Anchorage. He's accused of taking thousands of dollars in deposits on work that either was never started or not finished. Police say in another instance, Dwiggins advertised an apartment on Craigslist that wasn't his, taking rent and deposits on the apartment. Dwiggins is accused of swindling at least 21 people out of about $130,000. And Alaska State Troopers and adult probation officers are asking for help in locating 20-year-old Juneau resident Delina Sims. She's currently wanted on an outstanding warrant for failing to comply with conditions of probation on charges of assault in the third degree, criminal mischief in the fourth degree, and three counts of violating conditions of release. Bail for Sims has been set at $25,000. If anyone has information regarding Delina Sims' location, troopers ask you call them at 465-4000, and you can remain anonymous. Well, the holidays are upon us, and several local nonprofits are looking for some elves to help Santa deliver a little Christmas cheer to area families. As Casey Kelly reports, it's not too late to give.
AWARE is seeking individuals or organizations to participate in its Sponsor a Family program. The nonprofit Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Prevention Center is based in Juneau, but serves nine other communities in Southeast, from Yakutat to Tenneke Springs. Organizer Mandy Johnson says donations will go to help women and families who have utilized AWARE services in the past year.
That includes, you know, coming in for legal help, to come to our women's education group or children's groups, to staying here, to just, you know, calling us on the phone for the crisis line.
Johnson says about 30 families are signed up for this year's program. Most already have sponsors, but there's a need for one or two more. She says the goal is to give each family a food basket and a few holiday gifts.
Basic winter items like hats and gloves. And then we also ask the families if they need, you know, kind of a fun toy as well. So like a toy or a stuffed animal or something the kids are kind of interested in as well, just to kind of give it a little extra special holiday for them.
Captain Donald Warriner with the Salvation Army says food always seems to be a big need during the holidays.
What happens is we give out 200 food boxes, and then that kind of depletes our food for the following year.
The Salvation Army is already well into its delivery schedule for those 200 boxes.
We have already delivered some of those for the smaller families, like without kids. But Thursday is our distribution for the ones with families with kids. And so they'll be getting coats, they'll be getting toys, and they're going to be getting a big food box with, you know, turkey, stuffing, cranberries, all that stuff.
But no matter when donations come in, Warriner says they'll find a use for them. He says they're always running low on gifts for teenage boys.
They're hard to buy for. So, you know, like toolkits or wallets, cologne sometimes. You know, and another nice thing is, you know, like a gift card to McDonald's or iTunes if they have an iPod, or even to the theater. It gives them something to do that they might not have a chance to do.
Despite a relatively strong economy in Juneau, Warriner says the Salvation Army will probably serve 25 to 30 more families than it did last year.
I know unemployment's kind of not that bad in Juneau, but here it costs a lot to live. So, you know, you have people that have a job, it's just that they don't have enough to make ends meet.
Other groups, like St. Vincent de Paul and the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, are also still accepting donations for holiday programs. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And you can find links to the organizations mentioned in this story, also telephone numbers, by going to our website, ktonews.org. While the Coast Guard cutter Sherman is nearing its home port of San Diego after a 3-month patrol in the Bering Sea, the goal?
Being at home with their families.
Commanding Officer Captain Joe Hester and the crew of 180 left the 17th Coast Guard District, which encompasses Alaska, late last week. Hester encourages his crew to collect sea stories, and over the holidays, each will undoubtedly have plenty to tell their family and friends from their experience in the Bering.
I'll tell you right now, the favorite story that we're all looking forward to is being at home with our families. Right now, the XO's job is to keep everybody busy and get all the paperwork done before we hit the pier so nobody has to come in over Christmas. We can just sort of leave the boat to the duty section, which is a minimal crew, and everybody else gets to go home.
KTOO has checked in with Hester throughout the Sherman's patrol. Now that the High Endurance Cutter is wrapping up its Alaska tour, we will do that again later this week on Morning Edition. The puzzling illness that's affecting ring seals in the Arctic is now officially an unusual mortality event, or UME. The designation by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration will free up more federal resources to investigate the cause. Walrus have also turned up with similar lesions. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is expected to declare its own UME soon. Annie Feit reports.
Diseased ring seals started turning up sick and lethargic on beaches in Barrow in mid-July. Seals with similar symptoms have been found in Russia and Canada. Canadian veterinary pathologist Stephen Rafferty is on the investigating team. He says seals with hair loss have been found for at least 8 years in Canada, but these symptoms are clearly different.
What was really striking about this unusual event is as of May and June of this past year, animals were presenting with much more severe lesions, particularly around the eyes, the nares, and within the membranes between the digits of the hind limbs.
Besides skin lesions, most of the affected seals have fluid in the lungs, white spots in the liver, and abnormal growths in the brain. Some also have small lymph nodes, a sign of a compromised immune system. To date, NOAA has documented 75 sick seals. More than 60 have died. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service found walrus near Point Lay this summer with lesions very similar to the seals. No deaths among walrus have been attributed to the lesions. All along, a virus has been considered the most likely culprit, but so far, all of the known viruses labs have tested for have come up negative.
We've screened for 18 recognized pathogens, and these have all come back negative. There are additional tests that are ongoing and results are pending.
Rafferty says some viruses are difficult to find because they invade animals, cause damage, and then disappear quickly. The investigating team thinks some kind of infectious agent is probably to blame. That could include a virus, bacteria, fungi, or parasites. But the team is also looking at chemical contaminants or even radiation poisoning.
We're not ruling out any role by environmental factors
Carrie Rolls with NOAA in Washington, D.C. is coordinating the investigation. She says the University of Alaska Fairbanks is testing for environmental factors.
A lot of the other analyses, like the chemical pollutant analysis and the radionuclide analysis, take some time to get the samples submitted, and it takes some time for analysis.
Rolls says those results should be ready early next year, but a final answer will likely take much longer, a year or more. This unusual mortality event is the 55th that has been declared since 1991. Rolls says they require long investigations, and some don't ever come up with an answer. I asked her how this event compared.
This event is transboundary. It involves multiple species, and it is quite intriguing to try to understand what the etiology may be, and it may be a multitude of factors. So I think this one is going to be complicated. I think this one is going to take a long time to tease out all of those factors.
Rolls praises the coordination between several agencies and governments in trying to understand the event. Subsistence hunters in Alaska have also helped a lot, supplying carcasses for necropsies and information. The hunters are being told to avoid harvesting sick-looking animals. New cases of diseased seals continue to be reported, mostly from the Bering Strait area. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
After devoting four decades and tens of millions of dollars to save the gray wolf, the federal government wants to get out of the wolf protection business. Wildlife officials want to leave it to individual states to determine the future of the legendary canine predator. The gray wolf has recovered from near extinction in the lower 48 states. It now stands at a historical crossroads that could test both its reputation for resilience and the tolerance of ranchers and hunters who bemoan its attack on livestock and big game. Since being added to the federal endangered species list in 1974, the American wolf population has grown fivefold to about 6,200 animals wandering parts of 10 states outside Alaska.